Hello, and welcome to Switchblade Sisters, the podcast where women get together to slice and dice our favorite action and genre films. I'm film critic Katie Walsh. I'm filling in for April Wolf, who has handed me her blade for the month of June. Every week, we invite a new filmmaker on, a writer, director, actor, producer, and we talk in depth about their favorite genre films, maybe one that influenced their own work. Today, I'm so excited to have writer, comedian, actress, and one of my very best friends from college, the amazing Naomi Ekperigin, here in the studio. Welcome to Switchblade Sisters.
Wow. This is huge.
This is almost 20 years in the making.
Really? This is what we got degrees for.
I know. From Middletown to Maximum Fun. You can cut that.
You can keep at it.
Yeah. So I know Naomi really well, but I'm going to read you a little bio so you could all get to know her better. Naomi Ekperigin is a stand-up comedian, writer, actress, and podcaster. Got to be a multi-hyphenate these days. Mm-hmm. She was born and raised in Harlem, New York, and studied film and English at Wesleyan University, where she and I made some fun little student films together. And she also started her comedy career doing improv. After college, she toured with the National Theater for the Deaf and started stand-up in New York in 2007. She has a half-hour stand-up special on Comedy Central, and she's also appeared on HBO's Two Dope Queens, Late Night with Seth Meyers, Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell, Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, and she has written for Broad City, Difficult People, Great News, and the upcoming Mrs. Fletcher. You can find Naomi doing stand-up around town in L.A. and New York, very bi-coastal. And she co-hosts the monthly stand-up show and podcast, Couples Therapy. You can see the live show every month at the Virgil. So you have no excuse to not find Naomi's comedy stylings wherever you go and subscribe to Couples Therapy. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, friend.
Yay. So you chose Shaun of the Dead.
Yes.
Why Shaun of the Dead?
It's funny because, you know, when you first asked me, first of all, anytime I'm asked to do a task, I'm like, please stop. And like, for some reason, whenever someone asks like a favorite movie or anything you like, my mind instantly goes blank. Like my first impulse is like, I don't remember. Have I liked anything ever?
I know.
And then like, it took me a second. I'm like, oh yeah. One of my favorite films, one of the best horror movies. I mean, again, like horror comedy, right? Like that combo, but one of the best, I think, ever made, I think, really changed the game. And I was like, oh, duh. And then, of course, I was so excited to see you hadn't discussed it yet on the podcast.
Yes.
And was like, yes, this is it. I'm going to blow the whistle on how great this is. I'm a whistleblower.
People need to know.
People need to know. Shaun of the Dead is the shit.
It's so good. And I, rewatching it, I was just like, this movie's amazing. Like,
yeah.
It's so good. And to think about how zombie movies in 2004 were, like, not that popular.
Yeah.
And they kind of gotten out of fashion. And now to think about the zombie craze.
They started off. They brought us back to our modern day, our current day zombie obsession.
Yeah.
I think Shaun of the Dead kicked it off.
And also 28 Days Later.
Oh, yes. I love that one, too.
Right. And it's so funny because the Molyneux sisters from Bob's Burgers talked about that movie.
Oh, my God. Also guests on my podcast, Couples Therapy.
Oh, my God. What is it with comedy writers and zombies?
I don't know. I think because we're all husks, you know?
You're just we're all zombying like through life.
Hungry, shuffling. That is our energy.
But it's interesting because the sort of origins of Shaun of the Dead is, you know, Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg and Nick Frost all did the sitcom, the British sitcom Spaced. Mm-hmm. And Simon Pegg was saying that they had written an episode where he was playing Resident Evil, the video game, and mm-hmm. then it turned into a zombie movie in Spaced. And so then they were like, oh, let's do a zombie movie. Oh, and
pure.
You know, but they didn't even know that Danny Boyle was working on 28 Days Later until they were like deep into the writing process.
Okay.
So it was definitely like, you know, they were on the cusp of something. They were pioneering something.
Yeah.
But I also think they really pioneered this like zombie comedy, the zom-com, if you will.
Zom-com.
The rom-zom-com.
The rom-zom-com.
Which, like, now is such a thing, but back then was, you know, totally unheard of.
Right.
But, like, Zombieland, like, that was 5 years that later.
And that was a good one. Actually, I just watched that recently.
Yeah.
Apart from, I feel like, before you even asked me to come on, I was, like, watching that one, because that was one I remember seeing in the theaters and, like, loving that, too.
Totally, yeah.
I think what I love about both of them, am I totally interrupting? Are we about to do more things?
No.
Because I think what I like about both of those movies, I realized, I'm like, oh, it's style.
Yeah.
They both have fucking style, you know?
Yeah.
And that's like what makes them fun to watch.
Right.
If that makes any sense. Because I do feel like, you know, the thing, or also not just fun to watch, but it's like, I think that style actually gives it more of the comedy.
Right. Totally. You know? It's that visual comedy.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that. So I just realized I should have given a little intro to Shaun of the Dead, if you haven't seen it, but I think most people have seen it. But I'll give a little intro to Shaun of the Dead.
Get it together, people.
Again, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Shaun of the Dead, A, what are you doing with yourself?
Right, right.
What are you doing
to,
with your life?
Look in the mirror and get right with your God.
You need to ask the tough questions about what you've been doing for the past 15 years. But today's episode will contain spoilers that should not stop you from listening before you watch. Like April always says, it's not what happens, but how it happens that makes the movie worth watching. But we haven't given any spoilers for Shaun of the Dead yet, so pause right now, watch the movie, get back on the podcast, and I'll just give a little rundown refresher for everyone. Mm-hmm. Shaun of the Dead is a 2004 zomcom directed by Edgar Wright, written by Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg. Pegg stars as the titular Shaun, a directionless, immature, pop culture obsessed electronic salesman who hits bottom when his girlfriend Liz breaks up with him.
She said if she stayed with me, she'd end up coming in here every night for the rest of her life like these sad old fuckers, drinking herself to death, wondering what the hell happened.
He and his best friend Ed, played by Nick Frost, drown their sorrows at their favorite pub, the Winchester, and are pretty slow to notice the zombie outbreak as it is happening around them or the next morning. But pretty quickly, they get it together to try and save Shaun's mother and Liz and to seek refuge in the Winchester.
Mom, have you been bitten?
No, but Philip has.
Oh, okay. Has she been bitten?
No, Philip has.
Oh, okay. Listen, Mum, what sort of state is he in?
Oh, he's fine. Bit under the weather.
I see. What's the deal?
We may have to kill my stepdad.
Listen, Mum, sit tight, okay? You're not safe there. We're coming over.
Along the way, they pick up Shaun's mom and stepdad, played by the great Bill Nighy.
Bill Nighy. Oh, my God.
I know. He's amazing. Grab Liz and their buddies Diane and David. They hole up in the pub where one by one, their crew either turns into zombies or have to be killed or eaten by the horde that ambushes the Winchester. When all hope seems lost, the army arrives and dispatches the rest of the zombies with their machine guns. Shaun and Liz survive to live happily ever after, and Shaun keeps his best friend Ed as his zombie best friend with whom he can play video games. But yeah, I mean, I love the way that, you know, they do obviously have such a love for the genre, like Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, and like we were saying before, it was inspired by a Spaced episode, but they were also saying that they weren't trying to parody zombie movies. They actually really wanted to make a zombie movie.
Yeah.
They love Dawn of the Dead. I love Dawn of the Dead. Yeah. I actually also really love the Dawn of the Dead remake. Have you seen the Zack Snyder one?
No. Zack, okay, no. Nope.
Yeah.
But it was good?
It's his best movie. It truly is. I think Zack Snyder needs as little budget as possible.
Okay.
And like some limitations. Like a genre limitation can be really quite freeing.
Oh, God, there's nothing I love more. I mean, you know, it's, you know, I pick this is like my favorite type of thing, but I don't write genre. Like, it's all I want to write, actually. Like, the first original pilot I wrote was, it is a zombie comedy.
What?
Yes. It's called Dead Ends.
Oh, my God, I didn't know that.
We live in a world. Okay, literally, this is copywritten. I swear to God, if any of you bitches listening to this.
I know.
Literally, go and get this made. Actually, I might even stop talking about it because I feel like you're all creators listening. You are fanatics.
Yeah.
You probably, like, are a studio.
You know what? Your boundaries are your own, so.
But that was the first original I wrote. Because, like, that's, like, what I want, you know. I had written some specs before because I feel like I kind of came up right on that cusp where that's how I learned to write. Was like, I literally, like, I would read whatever scripts I could find online. I would watch the show, and then I would just try to write an episode of that show.
Right.
And so the first original, like, when literally, like, I feel like this was 2011, maybe. So 8 years ago, where it was like, okay, you need to have a sample. It might have even been later, but it was something where it was like, you need something original. It's like, oh, it has to be original. And I was like, well, okay. If you tell me I get to make whatever I want to make, right? The idea of like, this is my, it's like, just for me, this is my idea of like a good time. And
oh my
this
God.
Is like what I want to do.
That's,
you know?
So cool.
Oh no, it had to have been later because then you know what actually like made me so mad? When that TV show iZombie came out.
Oh yeah.
Because it was literally, because it was so similar, like without the procedural aspect, but this idea that you could be undead but still be sentient and present.
Okay, yeah.
And I was like, that's literally my whole thing, except she was black, and there was a journey there.
Damn it.
Yeah. Ugh. And so I remember being like, well, I guess I could chuck this in the trash.
No, save it.
No, I love it deeply. Yep. It is, well, I'll say, that, like, is what got me a meeting with Jordan Peele. okay. that script. So I was like, you know what? Worth every dang second.
Seriously. Wait, how did Jordan Peele read it?
Well, I don't even know if he directly read it, but the person under him, mm-hmm. you know, did. And then he really liked it. So we had a meeting and then he was like, oh, well, you're going to be out in L.A. Like, hopefully we can get you a meeting with Jordan. And then I literally made that my mission. Bothered everybody I could 100 times. Like, can he see me? Where is he available? Where will he be? What is happening?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like right after Get Out had come out.
Right, of course.
And so I like was literally like, I will come to his home. I will sit next opposite him on the toilet. Whatever I can. Like, if he's busy. You know what I mean? I'll wipe if he's busy.
Yeah.
And so, and that was like, you know, this where he's like, oh yeah, he's like, you know, we really liked your script and like what you're, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, you know?
So it was for a TV show.
Yeah. It was a
okay,
TV. It was
a pilot.
TV, yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
1 hour, half hour.
Okay. It was half hour.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Let's manifest this into reality.
Do you think we're over zombies now?
I worry that we've been oversaturated and it's sort of like, what's the next, you know, we've done vampires. Is it Frankenstein's? Is it werewolves? We kind of did the werewolf thing.
Yeah. I'm like, nothing is better than American Werewolf in London. You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm like, okay, it's like 3 days out of the month. You got a problem.
Right. Well, you know, we've done Teen Wolf.
Oh, right. We had our Teen Wolf. That was a fun romp.
You know, well, there, you know, we have the MTV show.
Oh, right. I forgot that exists.
I think I've seen like one episode of it. Just full disclosure.
Thank you for your bravery.
Yeah. But yeah, what's the, like, I still think there is, though, like, that zombies still are a rich territory because there is such potential for satire and they all have different meanings.
Right.
Like different political meanings.
Well, yeah, I think the thing that I like so much about it, and where the fun and individuality can come in, right, depending on who's telling the story. To me, it's about the breakdown of civilization.
Yeah.
What do you think the breakdown looks like?
Yeah.
Or where do you think the destruction starts, right? Where does the cracks, like the fault lines, where does that start?
Yeah, exactly.
For various people, you know what I mean? That is the thing. And I think what I like, though, what I've always liked, or what I enjoy about genre, and like with Shaun of the Dead too, right? It's such a personal story. Like in rewatching it, you know, to come talk, it is so tightly fucking crafted and how every single thing that matters is in that very first scene.
Yeah.
It is, you never take me anywhere. We do the same things. You have not introduced me to your mother. I want to live. You know, you don't have your shit together.
Yeah.
And that's all in the opening scene.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Those like, themes are like planted right away. Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And so that's what it's about. It's not like the zombies are the playground on which you can deal with all those themes.
Right. Well,
you know
because
what I mean?
It's sort of like Sean is a zombie in his own life.
Exactly.
He's completely unengaged with, you know, his girlfriend and his job and his life and his parents and his relationships with the people around him. And so I was actually thinking about this because zombies can, you know, Dawn of the Dead, it's sort of like satirizing
consumerism,
like mindless consumerism. They're all at the mall.
Yeah.
When I was listening to the Switchblade episode about 28 Days Later, it's like about rage and toxic masculinity and like you have these like fast running zombies.
Yeah.
And, and then, you know, they can mean anything you want them to mean. And I thought it was so interesting that this movie uses the zombies genre to satirize these sort of like directionless young men who are obsessed with pop culture and kind of like immature and stuck in this, like, can't get past their own selves, you know, to like grab life by the horns and take charge of it. And I was also thinking about a movie I saw recently, Under the Silver Lake, which is a great L.A. neo-noir starring Andrew Garfield.
Interesting. L.A. neo-noir.
Ooh, it's like, it's very Mulholland Drive. There's a lot of like codes to crack. and also, if you live in Los Feliz or Silver Lake, it's like eerie because they shot it all in that area. But it uses that genre to also satirize the same kind of young man who's like kind of... Like, I don't think Sean is misogynist. I think the Andrew Garfield character in Under the Silver Lake is definitely more misogynist. But, kind of, like, has problems with women.
Yeah.
And is, like, you know, not really doing anything about it. And so yeah. I, it's so interesting to look back and see how they use that genre to, like, you know, really skewer that character type, mm-hmm. to skewer Sean himself, kind
right,
of.
Right, yeah.
So it really can mean whatever you want.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, why the zombie genre is so rich, and especially now when it's like there's so many different things to talk about, you know, politically or, you know, in terms of climate change or overpopulation or whatever. Like I that's why I think like these stories keep proliferating.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why I'm so interested in it. I was kind of joke. I want to do the zombie show. I was like, the only people that are left are Black people because we the only one with the common sense.
Yeah.
I will tell you this. Because this is the thing, y'all. It's like, I always think, I'm like, I grew up in like Harlem in the 80s and 90s. You can't come at me with a milky eye shuffling and get close enough to bite me. You ain't getting close enough to bite me ever, KT Walsh.
Like, you're not trusting.
Like, because that's the whole thing you see. It's like, Karen, are you okay? Karen, are you okay? Karen, bite your damn jugular. See, if I saw Karen, I'd be like, okay, we gotta go. Karen Tripper. And you know what? We'll send her a care package. If she is truly sick, I will leave something on her doorstep.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, that's it. Like, we the only ones, like, and again, it's like, I don't have skills. I don't know my way with a weapon, but you would not get close to
but
me.
But you have a spatial awareness.
I have a full spatial awareness. Like, I cross the street if like a crackhead looking suspect.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like, if it was a zombie situation.
Yeah. I know.
Like, I'm taking the New York City subway. I will leap between cars.
No, but like, and that's so funny because, you know, the horror trope is that like the Black sidekick always gets killed first. It's like, that's completely unrealistic.
Like, literally the only person who would be like, you off. Bye.
I know. Like, who's like, I'm out of here.
Exactly.
Like, I know. It's so, I mean, you have to have that element in for a horror movie to be feature length.
Yeah.
You have to have that element of like, trusting innocence that like you're gonna just keep letting people have a second chance or letting them get close to you, and it's like, that's not what real life is.
But also I feel like that's what they did, because that's what I feel like they did do in the movie, right? Like, it was actually pretty good how quickly they got on board.
Yeah,
right. Like, meaning like, recognize there was the threat, and then you know, you have the news anchor, you know, basically being like, this is what you have to do.
The attackers can be stopped by removing the head or destroying the brain.
And then and they actually take it in.
Right. Yeah.
You know, which is, I think, to me, that's almost a suspension of disbelief, right? And I think in a lot of other movies, right, it is like, yeah, I'll go towards that obviously scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for them, because they're so in their own world and don't pay attention.
Yeah.
I'm almost surprised they watch the news all the way through.
Right.
And actually listen to what they're told.
Right. Well, it does take them a little while because... You know, I rewatching it, I notice how early all those seeds are planted.
Yeah.
Like, almost right away,
mm-hmm.
it's like, oh, a woman's coughing on the bus.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they're...
The guy runs... The homeless man about to eat a bird.
Right.
You know, but you see Sean Clocky being like, that looks weird.
Yeah.
But then goes about his business. Or even, you know, when they're leaving the pub that night.
Right.
Well, because that's the other thing, too, right? They do, like, as you said, these different versions of zombies. I was like, oh, they made their zombies slow.
Yeah, they have slow
zombies. To let them get those jokes in.
Oh, for sure. You know, really play on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, okay. But they're slow, but they're relentless. And so that's, like, mm-hmm. what... Like that gives you tension.
A classic Romero zombie.
Uh-huh.
Slow but relentless.
Slow but relentless.
Let's take a really quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about visual comedy with Edgar Wright.
Welcome.
Thank you.
No problem.
These are real podcast listeners, not actors. What do you look for in a podcast?
Reliability is big for me.
Power.
I'd say comfort.
What do you think of this?
Oh.
That's Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Jordan, Jesse, Go?
They came out of the floor?
And down from the ceiling?
That can't be safe.
I'm upset.
Can we go now?
Soon. Jordan, Jesse, Go, a real podcast.
Hello. Hello, and welcome back to Switchblade Sisters. I'm Katie Walsh, and I'm here with Naomi Ekperigin. We're talking about Shaun of the Dead and
yes,
loving every minute.
Loving every minute of it.
We were talking about slow but relentless zombies,
yes,
and that was going to be my segue into Edgar Wright's visual comedy, because I do think that they get so many jokes out of the, like, zombie shuffle.
Yeah.
And, like, is that person drunk?
Oh, my God. She's so drunk.
Aren't you bad, love?
Oh, she likes you.
Shut up.
She wants a cuddle.
Listen, I'm serious. I've just come out of a relationship.
Do something!
They really play on that.
Yeah.
Element of, you know, even when Shaun is waking up in the morning, like taking his huge yawn and
yeah,
kind of doing like a zombie thing, it's like they play on that physicality of
everybody, right? Like, because even those opening shots just of, you know, what he does so well, which for me is comedy, you know, comedy, a lot of comedy is the rule of threes and
mm-hmm,
callbacks and stuff
yeah,
like that. And he's all about that mirroring,
yeah,
you know, and like mirroring for comedic effect. So like Shaun shuffle versus the zombie shuffle, and him walking to, you know, walk into the corner store in his own days, you know, before and after the zombie outbreak. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he kind of is doing like the same thing. And, like, he does that so well, like, in the same way, I think, like, you know, when you see improv and it's like the callbacks and all that kind
of
stuff.
Oh, yeah, I know. One of my favorite jokes that's, like, continued throughout the movie is, you've got red on you.
Yeah.
And speaking of the cast, I was, like, I was noticing that that bratty little store clerk looked kind of familiar.
Yeah.
And he is an actor named Rafe Spall, who's like had quite the glow up, I might say.
Really? Wait, the one who works with him in the electronics store?
Yeah, the one who first says you've got red on you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, you know, he's like a hot British actor now.
Is
who
he
like
hot now?
Yes.
Wow.
He was
wow,
like in this he was in this horror movie called The Ritual that's on Netflix that I really like.
We'll be watching.
Yeah, it's like a woodsy, spooky,
okay,
wooden creature, like possible cult witch
okay,
moment.
Okay, I'm into it. Possible cult witch moment.
Yeah, like a little Blair Witch with like hot guys.
Okay. And honestly, that's how I felt when I saw Blair Witch. I was like, not hot.
You're like,
get more hot
people.
Guys.
Yeah. But yeah, so just like those little jokes that keep coming back. You've got red on you is so funny to me.
Yeah.
And it's like blood splatter on his face.
Yeah.
Like, you've got red on you. But yeah, like I was going to ask, you know, more about like writing comedy. Like, do you think about visuals when you're writing comedy? And I think about Broad City had a lot of visual elements of,
yeah,
you know, comedy. So was that something you guys talked about?
Yeah, I think it was always like, you know, and this was something, you know, we were talking about earlier. Like, I feel like comedy does need more visuals. So many times I think the scenes, it's all about the words. And even right now I'm working on a feature. I'm writing a feature. It's a comedy. And I'm like, okay, how can I show this? How can I show this?
You yeah,
know, and is there a way for it to be funny in someone's physicality?
Yeah.
And also just being so specific, right? Like, they're even like the little stuff for thinking about that same scene in the electronics store with the guy who's apparently hot now.
This is the important news that I bring on the podcast. Who is hot now? Okay.
Hot now. 15 years later.
Priorities. Rafe Spall.
Hot now.
Hot now. He's like a very Neville Longbottom.
Okay. Uh-huh. But like that moment, like for instance, like when you see Bill Nighy's character for the first time.
Yeah.
The way he like turns around so sharply and is like really intense
mm-hmm,
is so funny.
Yeah.
He has not said a word.
Yeah.
And it is hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's like, how can you introduce people in ways that make you laugh? But then also still like, you don't make that character a caricature.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think about it a lot. And like, yeah, with Broad City, you know, one of the things we always kind of talked about or what was so important, you know, a show set in New York. And people say this a lot, right? It's like, New York's a character. But what are all those specifics?
Yeah.
Right? Like, we would sit down. It's like, it's not simply to be on the subway, but who is on the subway and
yeah,
what's happening? Like, my favorite episode of the show is the finale of season 2, St. Mark's Place,
uh-huh,
where they're walking up and down St. Mark's waiting to go into a restaurant and just everything going. It's like they walk and a girl is peeing on the ground behind
right,
them.
Yeah.
A guy is like, you know, talking to his wife you know, like having some breakdown, like with a friend.
Right.
Like, all these small ways that are not our story.
And it's like, who even owns anything these days anyway?
Can you please spare a dollar?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get some food.
Good luck.
Thank you. Yeah.
Bless.
Yeah,
it helps.
Oh my God, we are jammed.
Can I get a buck?
Oh, sorry.
But you just gave her a buck.
We can't give everyone on the block a dollar.
Well, actually, you could. You just don't want to.
Actually, we couldn't because we're going to the meat sack and it's a cash-only restaurant.
Wow, that must be nice.
It is like giving you comedy just in the world they're in.
And it grounds you in the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it also is funny.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I have to say one of the funniest episodes of Broad City for me, what and such a New York thing, was when she has to go get the FedEx package.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. North Brother Island.
Yes, on North Brother Island, because I remember when I very first moved to New York,
mm-hmm.
I missed some FedEx package, and the instructions to get to the facility were like, take the L to the end of the line
and then
take
walking,
a bus.
Right.
And I was like, I'm just going to let that package go.
Right.
I don't need what was in it.
Yep. Yeah, it's like 12th Avenue. You close at 3 p.m.
Know.
You know what I mean? You're like, hi, I need to take a personal day to go pick up a package.
I know. And like, who's that woman? Gerald.
Yes.
Like, Gerald's one of my favorite Broad City characters.
Yes. Gerald was a typo that we kept.
Oh my God. This is a behind the scenes news that we get, okay? The details. But it was so perfect. Like, I'm like, Geralt is so perfect. I think about Geralt all the time. Abby, like, walks into that huge room and it's
she's
like
eating a yogurt.
Yeah.
Just a yogurt.
I know. It's like all those details, though, like the eating a yogurt, like, that's a visual detail
yeah.
that you could write, that you would write into a script, but also maybe would just think of on the day.
Exactly. Well, it's also like funny because what's interesting, though, is like, if I wrote she's eating a yogurt, if you just read she's eating a yogurt, you might laugh, but you might gloss over it. Like, it doesn't, and I think that's what one thing I'm thinking about, and like where it really helps, right? In the case of Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, like
yeah.
they wrote it together. He knows how it's going to go. So, you know, and one of the things I know Broad City did, and something I've kept, or I like in my own writing, is like jokes in the slugs.
Okay.
Like in the description, the character description, like kind of putting in a joke that, you know, kind of, again, keeps you reading and keeps that tone going,
yeah.
but also lets you know how I'm thinking of whatever visual I'm describing.
Oh, cool.
You know what I mean? Like, because I will, like, I'll write stuff and I'm like, you know, she looks in the mirror, that'll do. You know how it is out
That's
in these
awesome.
Streets. It's like what I would put in, I would put that in a slug, because that to me is going to tell also the actor how to really look. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You look in the mirror, like, take a moment and like, no, shoot that person's face. Looking at their body and then going, all right. And then leaving. Like, to almost like to put a slug is to give whatever the description is a little more meaning. And ideally, then whoever's shooting it will give it that meaning.
Yeah. And you your know? Voice is coming through so strongly in that kind of thing as well.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, your comedic voice is something that you really hone in your stand up. And I'm curious, like, I wanted to talk a little bit about like joke math and how there's like genre math.
Yeah.
So you've got in Shaun of the Dead, you have the genre math, like, okay, at this point in time, we have to have the zombie outbreak. This has to happen. There's definitely going to be a scene where someone has to kill a loved one.
Right.
You know, like including all these little elements of the formula. But then, mm-hmm. you know, you've worked on Broad City, which is sort of like its own beast. It's
yeah.
not even like
yeah.
a genre, or it's like a genre creator,
mm-hmm.
kind of like Shaun of the Dead is as well. And then, because I feel like there's a lot of, you know, shows trying to be a Broad
yeah,
City now.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you also have worked on more sitcom-y shows where it's this like 22 minute, you know, so Great News was a sitcom on
yeah,
CBS.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, how do you get this, like this, that, the other thing, like
yeah.
when you're writing and you have to incorporate all these like.
Yeah, it's very joke dense.
Yeah.
Very joke dense. But it's funny you say, because like, it's funny because I talk about it all the time. I'm not good at math. I'm not good at joke math. You know what I mean? Like, I know for myself when I perform, I can know when like the rhythm of something is funny.
Yeah.
Or I'll know when I'm like, I don't really have a joke there yet, but if I say it this way, it'll get a laugh.
Right.
Even though it may not have a joke. You know, like in the process of building
for
something.
For sure. Like, but if you like yell it.
Literally always, right? Like if I'm like, yell something that is inconsequential.
Yeah.
And people will laugh.
Yeah.
You know
They're
what I
like,
mean?
I'm going to laugh there.
Yeah, because you're like, well, it's like, why are they angry about a thing that doesn't matter?
Right, right.
That, I think, like, it's more like, oh my God, she's off her rocker. You know, it's like that kind of laugh, you know? And you're like, yeah. I'm like, I'll take it for now.
Yeah.
But it was very interesting to be in a room of joke mathematicians because I don't think of the comedy conceptually. For me, comedy comes from a feeling.
Yeah.
And what's, you know, usually for me, it's something that I am very passionate about, whether that passion is in the form of excitement or in the form of anger.
Mm-hmm.
But it's usually coming from a place.
Yeah.
And then we can, and then I can kind of mine the details of it for comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually because of how I'm viewing this thing. Like right now, I'm very stressed out because there's a spider in the bathroom.
There's a spider just anywhere.
No,
in the
world. In my home. There's a there's a spider in my bathroom that Andrew, my lover, will not let me kill because he says it's going to help. It's going to get the other bugs. And, you know, I have a lot of feelings surrounding what I think is his attempt to murder me. But it's like, you know, there's not math there. That's just me being very upset about a very innocuous insect. He keeps pointing out it has four legs. I shouldn't be so stressed out.
It's injured.
Exactly. He's like, it's half alive. And I'm like, useless. But
so it's not getting the bugs.
It's not. Thank you. You see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But no, I know to keep us on topic. But like this idea like of math where like it's more about the rhythm and the structure of the scene and the conversation. You say that, so they say that.
Yeah.
That was really hard for me. I much prefer to do stuff through the form of like, what is this character's personality?
Yeah.
And what would they say?
Yeah.
In this given situation. And sometimes I felt like in the case of like joke, it was anybody's joke, if that makes any sense. Like,
right.
There were certain, like, the stronger the character was, the clearer it was like, oh, they would say that.
Mm-hmm.
But then everybody else would be like, wait, you referenced that, but then you also referenced that. I don't even know who you are anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Like when it gets referential to character, you know, something where I'm like, wait, okay, so are you like, you know, I get it. We all contain multitudes. But in terms of, you know, trying to decide what kind of person is the character,
mm-hmm.
especially in a sitcom, people tend to be a little more, fit into a little more of a box.
Right.
To me, it was always easier to have the personality down first and then say who the character is. You know, like, it's funny because, you know, so long with shows, it's hard to remember what you wrote, but I'm like, I think I did write this joke. But it was like one thing in Great News where Nicole Richie character, you know, she's like, I love drama. She's like, one time I was at a party and I saw Venus Williams and I was like, hi, Serena. And it was just like, I was like, because that's who she is. Like, it is her delight in that. And it's like, it's a little more subtle. Or like, I remember I had a joke, and it was funny. It was a joke I had to like kind of like resell them on, where Tina Fey's character is going off on Andrea Martin's character. She's like, it's like, you know, to the daughter, she's like, you had a mother who was, you know, overbearing and did not, you know, let you do what you wanted and like wants you to have babies. And then Andrea Martin just goes, none taken.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, I don't understand.
Right.
And I was like, it is the assumption that she is offended. You know what I mean? Like having to kind of.
Well, those jokes are funny because you think of the character saying them. I almost think of, you know, like a Kelly Kapoor from The Office. It's like the things that she would say were funny, but they weren't necessarily jokes, but they were funny because they were from her voice and her point of view. And like your stand-up is so, it just feels like you're telling stories.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there, you know, obviously there's so much structure and like joke writing that goes into like how you do your stand-up. But it feels like, oh, I'm just like hanging out with my friend. And so it's like to make it that effortless is got to take so much work.
Yeah, it's the work or making sure it's not too effortless. I think the longer I do stand up, right, you get comfortable talking.
Yeah.
Like I can get up and talk.
Right.
I don't feel nervous, but I'm like, "Oh wait, these people need a joke."
Right.
They've paid money
or
they've devoted their time. Like, cuz I think that's what works with Shaun of the Dead, right? Like I feel like it's character jokes.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like it's all like what these people would say in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's a joke, but it's also grounded.
You know
what I mean? Like they don't. It never feels like it doesn't feel too. It doesn't feel so hokey, and like it feels like they're reacting honestly to the moment.
Yeah, definitely. And it does come from characters, and like everybody says what you think they would say. And there are those recurring jokes, the You Got Right on You, that kind of are shared.
Yeah,
amongst the characters. You know, his mom says it at one point. I think you know Liz might say it at one point.
Yeah.
And but. Everything that they say is funny, and or their reactions are funny, or the way that Wright shoots it is funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the scenes where they like go to the window and check that there are zombies there, and they're all climbing at the window, and then they're like, yep, they're still there. You know, like, that's funny, just the way you present it. And that those elements of like visual comedy, I think, are is you know, it all ties together, and it's like the form follows the function.
Follows function.
Follows the story. And that is what was drilled into us in college.
Yes, exactly.
Shout out Janine Basinger.
Shout
Wesleyan
out Scott
University.
Higgins. Shout out Lisa Dombrowski. You know, the whole crew.
The whole crew up in here. But the form always had to serve the story.
Right.
So, like, if you have a long tracking shot, like, it has to be, you know, for a reason.
Well, but that's the thing I think. But there's another thing, too. What I like, again, about these mixed genres, or what I try to keep getting to in my own work, and it comes back to form, because it's like, what are the stakes? I think what I like about, like, the horror comedy is that you have all the stakes of a horror, which is to survive.
Yeah.
The highest stake of all.
Mm-hmm.
With the personality of a comedy.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, like, a Walking Dead, like, it's funny. Walking Dead, like, after a couple seasons, I was like, I am so bored, Rick. I get it. You're the sheriff. You know what I mean? You got to take up the badge, bitch.
Yeah.
But then I love, there's another show called Z Nation, which we do not talk about enough. It was on Sci-Fi. Five seasons. And it had, like, the characters were allowed to have personalities. Like, there was not, it wasn't, like, you know, laugh a minute, but, like, there was a fun, like, funny characters. And I think so many times, just in horror, everyone's an archetype.
Yeah.
And everyone kind of talks in the utilitarian conversation of a, well, state what we need to do in this next chunk.
Right.
Where do we need to go? I'm scared. Where's my daughter?
The emotional stakes.
Yeah,
yeah,
like, they just say it.
Yeah.
But without having individual personalities.
Right, and, like, you would never... The way a lot of people talk in straight zombie movies or disaster movies, whatever, I just saw Godzilla, and, like, this was definitely the case in that, in the writing of that, is, like, people are just, like, stating the subtext.
Right, lay out the facts.
And no one would... no human being would talk like that.
Yeah. And that was, like, I think that's what, to me, that is the comedy in those genres. Like, it is just reacting the way a human would react in a high stakes situation. The fumbling, like, when they are trying to figure out how to kill the zombie. And again, this is where we have our slow zombies, slow but relentless, and tossing the different records and being like, don't do that one.
Right.
Do this one.
Yeah,
you
like,
know?
Oh, that's like an original pressing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like the second record ever bought. You know, like, having that. And, like, again, because they're slower and they don't necessarily think that they're going to die in 10 seconds.
Right.
They can have that thought and say that thought.
Yeah. And it gives you more insight into who they are.
Yeah.
It also sort of pokes fun at them being like, okay, actually, your priorities are totally out of whack right now. And your priorities were out of whack with your girlfriend because you couldn't make the reservation.
But then, like, you know, but as you said, too, about, you know, form following function, you know, serving story. My question was always like, how can you add that sense of form to more comedies?
Yeah.
Straight comedies, right? Because he has the generic conventions to help him, you know, to help him shape every single scene.
Right.
Knowing what's coming. We know literally title alone. We know Shaun of the Dead. We know from that first poster what we were going to see.
Right.
Right. As the viewer, you sit in there and you're waiting and you're tuned into the slow shots and the shuffle and the this and that. Mm-hmm. So he knows what he has to do. Edgar Wright knows what he has to do within that genre. And then he's got these two comics that he, you know, comedian guys who have this relationship that he can play with. What about in a plain comedy? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's because comedy, you know, it tends to be cheaper. Even though, I mean, I don't know anything about the budget of Shaun of the Dead.
It was pretty low.
Low, right?
Yeah. Like, so, they said, like, that the budget was pretty low, and they were kind of, like, felt like student film at the moment, at the time. They actually, a lot of the zombies were played by fans of Spaced, and I think they each got paid, like, £1. So they were just, like, sending out these messages, like, if you're a fan of Spaced, like, come be a zombie in our movie. And, like, some of them were getting kind of irate because it was, like, really long days and stuff. And I think a lot of people, even crew members, were, like, Edgar Wright tells the story where, like, some, you know, zombie or crew member or something, like, didn't realize that he was the director and sort of, like, leaned over to him at one point and was like, ah, this one's going straight to video, huh? But it is interesting how he, in his comedies, has always sort of relied on another genre to sort of extract more comedic effect from those generic conventions. So your Hot Fuzz, he's like making fun of all those, like, Michael Bay, like, shots. Like, it's funny because it's just a normal conversation, but he's got the camera like whirling
right.
around them.
Or also like in the tiniest, quaintest English town.
Right.
You know
exactly,
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it's like we're not in Manhattan.
Yeah.
But the stakes are high and the guns are blazing.
Totally. And then, you know, The World's End, alien movie,
yeah.
Baby Driver, heist movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he does sort of like, you know, these genre mashups. And I think in Scott Pilgrim,
yeah.
he uses like the comic book.
Yeah, the video game.
Video game stuff to like draw a lot of comedy out of that. But, you know, just little things like the hand bringing the phone in the
right,
scene. Is like,
right.
It's just kind of quirky and odd and
yeah.
Adds to the rhythm of the way the film works. You know, the rhythm comes kind of from... not necessarily the writing, although that's there, but from the editing, from
right.
the framing and staging and the camera movements. Like, I feel like he kind of uses a little bit of that, like, fast, fast, slow Hong
yeah.
Kong action movie editing
mm-hmm.
For kind of really mundane moments. There's the scene in the morning where Sean's getting ready and it's like, quick, you know, coffee cup,
yeah.
fridge, brushing your teeth. Like quick shot and then longer shot. And then
right.
his roommate, Pete, mm-hmm. played by Peter Serafinowicz, another guy who went on to big things. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, and then it's like fast, his exposition
right.
of his day. And so that kind of rhythm is super interesting to create just a little sense of... I don't know, you know, it's comedy, but it's also just like the vibe.
It's also too, like, it's enlivening the exposition.
Exactly.
How do I show you this person going through their day in a way that's fun to watch? You know,
exactly.
not funny, fun.
Right.
And it's like, that's like what he does. And I'm like, always like, I'm dying to like, I wonder what his scripts look like.
I know.
Again, he knows what he's shooting, right? So maybe he doesn't write it. But like, so that's the thing. It's like tricky because when you see someone who's already written the thing, so they can write in whatever way because they know what they're going to ultimately do.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to see that kind of thing written out if you as a writer wanted to tell a director, this is what I'm going for. You see
yeah.
what I'm saying? Like, how do you, because I think about it, I'm like, how do you, again, like when I'm writing, I think about how it would look.
Right.
You know, and I can't even always describe it,
mm-hmm.
but I know I have an idea in my head of how this should look.
Yeah.
You know, but then of course you bring on a director to do their job, which is to have an idea
right.
of
and
how
they have
it should
to have
look.
What they're,
yeah.
you know, what it helps to be, you know, a writer director like Edgar Wright. So we're going to take another really quick break and we'll come back and talk more Shaun of the Dead.
Have you ever watched a movie so bad you just needed to talk to somebody about it?
Well, here at the Flophouse, we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything. We'll watch it and we'll talk it. We do the hard work.
Featuring the beautiful vocal talents of Dan McCoy.
Stuart Wellington.
And me, America's Rascal, Elliot Kalin.
New episodes every other Saturday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts, dude. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Switchblade Sisters. We're talking Shaun of the Dead with Naomi Akpergan, amazing writer, stand-up, podcaster, actress.
Thanks, friend.
Bon vivant. Best friend.
Raconteur.
Yeah. So what's interesting to me as well is that Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg and Nick Frost all worked on Spaced, and then they do a movie. So going from TV and mm-hmm. kind of translating that sensibility, but it's not the same characters from Spaced. I feel like that's such a hard leap to
yeah.
go from a TV to a movie, still maintaining the sensibility, but not, you know, doing like a Reno 911 movie.
Exactly.
Although I do love the Reno 911.
Literally, right?
yeah.
Perfect. No, I know what you mean because as I said, right now I'm writing a feature, which is the first one I've written since my thesis at Wesleyan University.
Oh.
But I haven't.
So it's really easy.
Really, truly a nightmare that I'm going through right now. You know, telling a long story. Or really, in a way, it's funny. It's like, because with, especially with most comedies, you know, it's a standalone episode. It's kind of like, what's the situation we can put the character in? If you're lucky, you then have the, you know, you're also working on the level of what's the longer arc for the character and what is the bigger thing they're working towards.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, you can fold them both in. But so many times it's like, you know, what's the standalone situation? And then at the end, like, mention, how's it coming with that other thing? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like kind of tacked on or
right.
bookended.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the movie, it's like, how do I introduce... Really, in the space of 90 minutes, 98 maybe.
My thing is 90-minute movies. I
know you do.
I literally rate every movie on the running time. It's like my weird sort of Rain Man-ish quality.
I'm with you on that. I think especially, you know, again, I love a good action movie, right?
Totally.
It takes so long to get all 49 superheroes together. You know what
oh
I mean? Like,
my
I get it.
God.
Okay, 2 hours and 15. I'm here. But... You know, in general, like, I'm like, but think about it, though. 90 minutes is a very little amount of time to get you to meet a character, introduce, get you to care about them,
mm-hmm.
introduce their problem,
right?
Whatever they have to overcome, watch them over, you know, attempt to overcome it, face a challenge, attempt to overcome it, face another challenge, and then finally come out on the other side and make all those moments meaningful.
Right.
That's not a lot of time.
And allow for the character to grow and change.
Well, right. And also, but then, like, how do you quickly, again, right? Like, what you have in Shaun of the Dead. I know within 4 minutes who he is.
Yeah.
I know in that opening scene the guy he is.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I need, right? And so, like, how can you, you know, and that, but the thing is, you have, again, you have his life at risk and the life of his family at risk. And you have him literally, you go from a guy who, like, literally sits in one pub to a guy who has to, you know, bury his mother.
Right.
Right. Like, in the space of 90 minutes. And you're like, well, yeah, that's the growth and change.
Right.
How can you have those big moments, by big, I mean emotionally impactful. How can you have a moment as emotionally impactful as his mother? Because that's the thing I like about the movie so much, too. It plays all the emotions real.
Yeah.
For two dudes who are silly, for, you know, something that is so comedic, Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg just as quickly lean into the drama and the pain of it as well.
Yeah, they don't shy away from that pathos.
Yeah.
Even the scene with Bill Nighy in the car
yeah.
when he's dying.
You were 12 when I met you. Already grown up so much. I just wanted you to be strong and not give up because you lost your dad.
Philip, you don't have to explain, huh?
No, I do. I always loved you, Sean. And I always thought you had it in you to do well. And you just need motivation, somebody to look up to. And I thought it could be me.
Yep.
It's like, oh my God,
right.
Bill.
And now he has to go.
Yeah.
You know what it reminded me of? It's messing up crazy. Honestly, listeners, stay with me. do you remember The Birds? When
yes.
we took Hitchcock. We had a class at Wesleyan, you had to watch all the films of Alfred Hitchcock senior semester. But the thing about The Birds, right? You would have the attacks by the birds,
mm-hmm.
but it always coincided with an emotional moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was, you know, whenever, like, when she, like, revealed, like, ah, God, of course, now I'm forgetting the details of The Birds. But I just remember, it felt like every time something was revealed, it was after the birds had attacked.
Yeah.
It forced someone to get honest about something or to say something.
Yeah.
That they were keeping hidden. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so in
yeah,
a way,
yeah.
it's like the horror and the fear and the big bad.
Like, makes you uncover things.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that makes make the character specifically uncover things.
Makes you reveal things, yeah, that you wouldn't otherwise say.
Yeah.
There are parallels to be drawn between zombie movies and The Birds because mm-hmm. we don't really know why the birds are attacking.
Yeah.
We don't know why they're there. And they're just sort of this, like, horde that we
right.
don't understand. And
yeah.
they slowly collect and accumulate.
Yeah. And you know they're coming. And it's like, let's get into shelter.
Yeah. I've seen The Birds too many times, and I think it has given me a phobia of birds. I've seen it like 6 times and I don't know why. It's not like I
yeah.
love it so much, but I mean, I like it, but
yeah.
I birds cannot get near me.
That's so funny. We own the birds, the VHS of the birds growing up. And my mother also hates birds.
Okay, well, me and your mom have a lot to talk
about. Get this. She's like, oh, don't bring no bird in this house.
Whenever birds flap near me, I just, I get unsettled. I don't like it.
You don't like the flapping at all.
I reveal a lot of things about myself on this podcast.
I love your truth.
But I think that the really important thing, the smart thing that Shaun of the Dead does is they don't go far. They go to the Winchester three times.
Yeah.
They start out at the Winchester. Mm-hmm. He goes to the Winchester after he gets dumped. And then during the zombie attack, they go back to the Winchester mm-hmm. again. So it's like they don't there's not a ton of plot in the sense that like they're not like, OK, and then we have to do this and that. Like mm-hmm. so we can really hone in on his growth and that sort of rule of threes of, OK, he's a total space cadet, like personal zombie the first time we see him there. Then he's like drowning his sorrows, the worst, you know, rock bottom. Then the last time he goes to the Winchester, he's like Rambo, deer hunter, gets the gun, confronts his demons, mans up, takes care of his girl, shoots his mom in the head. So it's like that repetition does allow you to follow his change.
When I watch it, and I also think, I'm like, how can I do that same thing with a straight comedy?
Yeah, exactly.
How can I have, again, how can you have the stakes? How can you have big moments and have you care, you know, as it happens? Because that's what I love about the genre. I think the genre gives you such a clear drive.
Yeah, totally.
Because it's literally just get to the Winchester.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, what are the first it's get to mom, get to Liz, get to Winchester.
Right.
So, you know, those are your act breaks, for lack of a better term. Like, that kind of lets you know what's up, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so simple and clear. And now, just put a bunch of stuff in the way.
Right, exactly. But it's sort of almost like you were saying with a comedy, like a half hour, where it's like, okay, in Broad City, you'd be like, okay, this week, Alana gets a temp job. Or this week, Alana meets the creepy Fred Armisen baby. goes to get the package or whatever it is. And it's sort of like there's a similar ethos to that. Like, okay, in this act, we're going to get mom, or we're going to get mom and Liz. And then, like, we're going to throw all this weird stuff in that's going to happen to them along the way.
Right.
In this act, they're at the Winchester and they're beset by zombies. So it's sort of like three sitcoms.
Yeah. Right? It's like three, like, but as you said, right, like, I think that's why they were able to write, as you said, like, they don't go far.
Yeah.
You know? And I do wonder, like, did they, in the process of writing it, putting it together, was like, okay, let's treat it like, if you could do an super long episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you do like an hour and a half of Spaced, you'd still take commercial breaks. You'd still have to like stop and restart.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing what those ends are going to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, is that the thinking that helps you kind of keep that way? Because I try to tell myself that too. Sometimes I'm like, okay, now treat some of these scenes like the comedy in this will come from treating the scene like a standalone sketch.
Yeah.
And
ideally
giving a character a really specific, like a quirk or a tick or a, you know what I mean? Or like, so that like your main character is on this mission, but then bumping up against these like randos.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like, is that funny?
Making the people and the scenarios funny.
Right.
Yeah. It's got to be so hard to write comedy.
Yeah. It's like so, or even like what I'm writing now, like I wouldn't call it a hard comedy at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's much more just like a character story, but I think the comedy is going to keep you interested in it.
Right.
Because like, I don't know, was Lady Bird considered a comedy? Wasn't it like in some categories of comedy?
Yeah, I guess it kind of
wasn't
is.
But it's like, it's not though.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say it's like a drama. It's more like, I'm just like, I don't know. I feel like sometimes to me, coming of age story is its own genre.
Right.
You know what I mean? There should be the genre of like character finding themselves.
Yeah.
You know, where aimless person makes a choice.
Right.
That feels like its own genre sometimes. Mm-hmm, it's like, can have funny moments, can have, but like not, you know, it's like, it's not hard. It's not all light.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's like, I don't think Lady Bird, I don't think of it as a comedy, but it's got funny moments in it.
Yeah.
So, it's got to be so hard to write comedy because you can sort of make your characters say funny things, but then how can you also write a funny scenario or like make the comedy come from like the action that happens to them? So balancing the characters saying funny things that are also authentic and like pure to their journey. And authentic to their character and who they are, but then also, like, what crazy scenario are they in? And it's sort of like making these genre mashups of horror. You know, I think that that is a really smart way for Edgar Wright to translate his sensibility from Spaced to a feature. So I think that was a really smart way for him to do that. But, you know, it's like they play so much. I think they're very reverent of the zombie. You know, they want to make a good, scary zombie movie. But at the same time, they are extracting a lot of that humor out of, like, the conventions of the zombie movie.
Right.
Which I think we've gone over at this point in time. But, yeah.
But,
yeah, I mean, do you write, like, even for sitcom or shorter half-hour characters, are you, like, who is this person? Where are they from? Are you writing little background stories for them?
For my own stuff, yeah. And, like, it also, like, I also try to do that as much in advance as possible because it will help you when you're writing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, little stuff like I will do that. I'll do, like, a silly questionnaire. What's their favorite music? What do they think of Ariana Grande? Do you know what I mean? Like, each character, I want to know my character's opinions on everything.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And ideally, that opinion can now let me know, now plop them in any situation.
Yeah.
And that gives me a sense of who that person is, if that makes any sense.
That's so funny because you, on Couples Therapy, the podcast, you and Andy do that little questionnaire with your guests.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
could we be friends?
Like, could we be friends?
Yeah.
It's like, what do you think about salad?
I know. I'm like, do you see salad as a punishment? but those kind of questions, right, they're like, kind of let you know who the person is and, like, what you're dealing with. It can give you a sense of, like, okay, if you like salads, then we're not only going to hang out once every 12 weeks.
But even if the salad question doesn't come up, it's still, like, in the background of, like, who, what the decisions that they're making.
Yes.
whether or not to kill a zombie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you saw someone milky-eyed and shuffling towards you, would you go to them?
Right.
Or would you stay across the street and say, you good?
I think a salad eater would go to them.
Definitely. Most definitely. A salad eater would be like, get in my car. I'm taking you to the hospital. I'd be like, stay right there. I'm going to make a call from my house.
It's so funny that we're talking about this because I think another one of the genesises of the film was that, like, Nick Frost and Simon Pegg on Spaced, like, had their zombie apocalypse plan.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. And so they would talk about it. And, you know, so, I mean, obviously it was, like, on the mind. Do you have a zombie apocalypse plan?
I really do. But, like, lately I've really been feeling like my plan is, like, I got to learn a weapon.
Oh, okay.
I gotta, like, learn, like, literally, we were watching it. I was watching it with Andy, and I was like, "And you, like, you know, they're in the house and looking for them." I'm like, "Andy, what do we have? We don't even have anything in this house to kill anybody with."
Yeah.
Because here's what I know I have to do, because you know I love World War Z. And I think about this, because what you need is, you want to have a light bat. Ideally, you want a light, like a titanium bat. Something, you know, again, it's got to be, because you got to really come in with the heart, you know, you got to come down hard.
You have to be able to swing it.
The bat ideally should have, like, some spikes on it, or like a knife at the end, because you want distance too. Again, you don't want to have to get close to that zombie.
Really, Jeffrey Dean Morganing. What was his character's
name?
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
On Walking Dead.
Yeah, yeah, on Walking Dead. I
know. Did you're it have
talking about Negan. Yes, okay. he had nails on his thing. But I, like, just in the end, you want something like that. You know, again, like, maybe an old-timey machete type situation. Ooh. Where you've got, again, you've got that long kind of musket with the knife at the end.
The knife on the gun.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about, okay. The knife on the gun.
Yeah.
But you want to have it, like, but the idea is it has to be light.
A bayonet.
Bayonet! There you are, you're correct. Not a machete, bayonet, much better. But you want that, you have to keep a distance. You know what I mean? It's also like, you got to find some light. Again, it's about light because you got to keep moving.
Right.
You got to keep moving. So what is a
light
nice
jacket?
Light? No, not a jacket. Protective gear. Because that's the other thing too. You got to cover up some areas so you don't get bit up. You know what I mean? And a helmet. Again, a helmet's going to get...
Baseball gear?
Yeah, it's a little too chunky.
Hockey gear.
That's chunkier.
Okay.
Katie! What are you saying?
I don't know.
You are going to die, and I cannot carry you.
Okay. I'm going to get my bat with the nails on it.
Exactly.
I think I could kill some zombies. I think I would get ferocious in a moment.
I like want to think I could get ferocious. I think I don't have aim. I think a gun takes two, like, to really aim it at the head every single time.
I know.
That was, again, one of the things I liked about Shaun of the Dead. Like, he couldn't really do it. Like, he did it, like, every fourth or fifth time.
Right.
And it's like, that's accurate.
The other thing I love that's so British is there are no guns except for the replica Winchester. Or not, it's actually a real one, but, you know, the, like, decorative Winchester
head
at the bar.
I know. I was like, that's so funny. And just like, I'm going to golf club.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, see you later. I was like, okay, Frodo makes a cameo.
Yes.
Didn't know Martin Freeman. I got to remember, obviously then I didn't know Martin Freeman.
So if you watch this movie on Amazon Prime, there's all these little like fun facts that pop up while you pause it. And I paused it at that moment and they were like, this, you know, this scene reunites all these like comic pairings from British television.
Yes, yes. Which you know,
the two gangs, the two gangs that come together, which I had no idea. So thank you, Amazon Prime. Fun fact.
I noticed the same thing. Like, I didn't realize, too, Diane is Pam from the British Office.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Of course, Lucy I watch Davis. It. And I go, she's on Sabrina. Because that's what I had seen recently. Like, I was like, oh my God, the aunt from Sabrina. And Andy's like, she's on the original British Office.
We all have our own references.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I think we should wrap up.
Okay.
This has been a dream.
A truly
I loved it. We need to talk about zombies all the time.
Yes, please.
We're going to add this into the flavor of our friendship.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Thank you guys so much for listening to Switchblade Sisters. I'm Katie Walsh. I've had Naomi Paragon as my guest. Thank you for listening to Switchblade Sisters. If you like what you're hearing, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you do, we'll read it on air. Here's one from Grace, Under Pressure. Nothing makes my Fridays like putting on a fresh Switchblade Sisters. I'm not well-versed in film, and 9 times out of 10, I haven't seen the films discussed. But like April says, that never stops me from listening. More than anything else, I love hearing art and womanhood discussed in a space created by artists and women. But the occasional deep dive on rubber prop monsters is good too. Extra kudos to April and Casey for the insane amount of research that goes into every episode. If you want to let us know what you think of the show, you can tweet at us at SwitchbladePod or email us at SwitchbladeSisters@MaximumFun.org. Please check out our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/SwitchbladeSisters. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.